Hello, everyone, and good morning for the final time. It is your Big Brother 19 live feed update. I'm your host, Taryn Armstrong, and today we have some very special guests. First, we've got Brent Welgemon. How you doing, Brent?
Taryn, I can't wait to talk to you today, and I also can't wait to get back to bed.
And also, for the final update here, we've got Rob Cesternino. How you doing, Rob?
Oh, your boy is here, ready to go.
Yes. Wow, Carl, that sounds very much like your speech from last year. Oh, hi. Yeah.
Uh-oh. Yes, we are here to update you on everything that's going on the live feeds, as little as that is. But we're also here to talk about Paul's game. We're going to run through it as we've done with Josh and Christmas. A lot more to talk about with Paul. So maybe not as granular. We're going to talk maybe a little more big picture.
Yeah, well, I'm very excited to do that. And this is such a big night. I mean, here we are. It's September 20th. It's the finale of Big Brother. And we're going to get all of these answers tonight. And I'm very excited to go through Paul's game. But it really is at this point where either Paul will win and then he will, I believe, become one of these top five all-time winners, and we will talk about him. And I think that history will be kind to him moving forward, or he will come up short again, and we will talk about him as this Russell Hantz figure that played back-to-back, potentially went to the finals twice, could not win a jury vote. And I think that a lot of the discussion following this will turn into, could Paul ever win Big Brother? Could he win a season? And why has he lost these jury votes back to back? And he has these two trajectories that he could go towards in only a matter of hours that are really going to define his legacy as a Big Brother player.
Yeah, I think that's probably true, even though I disagree probably with both of those trajectories. I'd probably, in true Fancy Fencerton style, say it's somewhere in the middle. But basically, to update you on what's happening on the feeds here, Josh has essentially confirmed the fact that he will be taking Paul to the final two. So unless something changes between last night and tonight, we will be seeing a Paul and Josh final two. That is what it seems to be. Josh also talked to the cameras. He's super happy about being here. This is his dream, all of that stuff. They've been practicing their final two speeches. I don't think either one is really going to make much of a difference, but that's basically what's been going on, Brent.
Yeah. It was sort of interesting listening to Josh yesterday. I had not really realized it. I had sort of considered it, but I was like, well, maybe I missed something because I haven't been paying attention to the feeds a lot because there hasn't been a lot going on. But Josh just decided to start doing his final two speech yesterday. And girl, we got problems. I don't know how it never dawned on him before that, you know, this little house you've been living in, it's coming to an end. And if you're planning on taking Paul to the end, and Paul, you know that Paul is like 99.9% going to take you to the end. Josh has seen this coming from like, you know, 3 weeks ago that Paul was going to take him to the end. I don't know how you could not have been preparing before now, but he just decided to yesterday. It seems like Taryn, after he saw that Paul was practicing his final two speech.
Yeah, it was funny too, because Josh had been asking Paul, like, what do we do for the final two speech? Like, what happens there? And Paul's just like, oh, you know, I just kind of wing it. And like trying to prevent Josh from doing any practicing. But he did practice a little bit. Again, not super great here. I don't think Josh is going to be like winning any votes in the final two speeches by any
means. I think he could lose a vote. I think he could turn a win into a loss. It's like Gina Marie levels of bad. It's really terrible, Rob. Like it's like,
well, what is he saying, Brent? Can you give us a preview?
He's like talking about, I played a strategic and social game. I won competitions when I had to. I put targets on other people's backs. That does not sound like his game. He didn't put targets on anybody's backs. He put targets on his own back by getting into fights with people. I wouldn't say he played a social game at all. Strategic. I mean, he was Paul's lapdog the entire time. He does not seem to recognize that. He seems to recognize that Paul and him, he thinks that Paul and him have both played aggressive strategic games. That's how he sees his game right now. I'm afraid that there could be like snickers and titters from the jury.
Wow. So I think that it doesn't matter what Josh says. Okay. He could get up there and read the phone book. I think that tonight's vote will be an up or down referendum on Paul. And I do not think that he will potentially lose any votes based on what he's saying, barring a complete disaster where he wets his pants up there. I think that he will probably just the jury will be deciding whether they hate Paul or not.
Well, I do think there's maybe something to the idea that, like, if the jury is so soured on Raven and Matt because they refused to admit that they got played and they weren't masterminds, that if Josh goes up in the final two and essentially starts being Raven and saying, I was a mastermind of this season, that maybe some of that anger toward Matt and Raven, instead of going toward Paul, will end up on Josh. I do think that may be a possibility if that's what we're looking at.
I hope not. I hope Rob's right. And there's no way that Josh can blow this if he does have a shot at winning here, because I feel like with Josh, if there's a way that he can blow it, he will.
Yeah. You know, and with Josh and Paul, just to go back to this potential Russell Hance angle, that I could see Josh as a little bit more of the Sandra figure here, and not to dare insult the queen by comparing her game with Josh. But I think that Josh is the person who's more likely to shut down a Matt or a Raven if they get up there and start talking about how great Paul is. And if anybody comes on the attack to him, I think that he is pretty likely to just, you know, in the same way that we've seen him getting these confrontations this season, if someone comes for him in the final two, sometimes the jury likes that. I feel like they like that enthusiasm and that fire. And so it could be interesting where I feel like that Paul will be very tentative in the final two and just stick to his talking points, where I think that maybe Josh could be the person who ends up tapping into the momentum and the energy of the night.
I'm not totally sure about the fact that Josh would be willing to shut somebody down. I mean, I hope he is. That would be great. I actually think that would work for him. I'm thinking he might be a little bit too nervous or a little bit too deferential to the moment to do that. Remember that, you know, this is taped in front of a live audience, and survivors, like, you know, out in the middle of a jungle after you've spent 39 days with these people and you're still all dirty. So there is that. The one thing I am positive about, though, is that Paul will go down his laundry list of talking points. I actually didn't realize it until Matt Liguori tweeted Paul's speech from last season, Rob, but last season's speech sounds a lot like this season's speech, with a few numbers changed and the fact that he's a vet. I mean, it is absolutely amazing that it's the same damn speech and he's going to give it the same damn way.
Yeah. And I remember people saying, like, oh, Paul's speech was so much better than Nicole's. What a great speech it was. Very much not the case.
I was one of those people.
I think all Josh needs to do is, like, he talked to the cameras earlier in the morning and he was explaining, like, it's my dream to be here. I'm so happy that I got to experience this. This is so amazing for me. Like, do that in your final two speech. Explain your passion. You are a human being. That's who you are. That's the one strength that you have. And Paul, he does. He looks like just like a vet robot. Like, make him really stand out that way. Show just how enthusiastic and grateful you are to be here. That is what's going to not lose you votes. I don't think it's going to necessarily win you any votes, but it's not going to lose you any votes.
Taryn, I think he gets there. I think that this is the same guy still that when I spoke with Robin Cass the other day, that she was talking about how even in casting, when she went in, oh my God, I can't believe it. The same guy who flipped out when he met Ika, the same guy who flipped out when he met Big Jeff. I think that if he's sitting there in that final two, I don't think he's going to even remember whatever speech he's coming up with right now. I think he's going to fly by the seat of his pants. And I think that that's actually going to be better for him than whatever he's coming up with right now.
All right. Yeah. Fingers crossed. Yay.
I would agree that it would be much better. I mean, he's also talking about, like, Paul, he didn't do anything in this game. I did all the moves. Like, I don't know if the jury's going to like that. But let's get into Paul's game.
You never know. And I'll cite Australian Survivor season one. the example of that, you know, so let's get a delusional person up there and like, maybe.
All right. Well, let's figure out whether or not Paul has done anything by going through Paul's game. It all starts back in week one when Kevin takes that $25,000 temptation and allows Paul into the game, where he has to give out some friendship bracelets. He interviews people one by one. He ends up giving the friendship bracelets out to Ramses, Jessica, Dominique, Elena, Mark, Kevin, Raven, and Jason. Interestingly enough, both Christmas and Josh not given a friendship bracelet. You know, obviously Alex wasn't either. Some of his most loyal allies not given a bracelet here, but doesn't really matter because he's able to win them over anyway. He doesn't have a vote in this thing, where they vote out Cameron. And then they've gone to the HOH competition. But, Brent, what were your thoughts on the friendship bracelets? Do you feel like he played this well?
I think he played it about as well as he could have. I probably would have played it a little bit differently and tried to really secure some friendships and alliances maybe going forward. It seems like it was very willy-nilly as far as who got friendship bracelets and who didn't. And the people that he eventually became friends with, many of them didn't even get bracelets, as you correctly point out. So I guess all things considered, of all the things that people point to that were advantages for Paul, they frequently point to this, and I've mentioned it a few times just because I've been especially bitter about it, but I really don't think that there was much there with the friendship bracelets. I really was more annoyed with the pendant of protection.
Yeah, what was your take, Rob?
Just to go back to that first night, I think that we're sort of like skipping a beat of that, the way that Paul was introduced to these people, where it really was reminiscent of The Bachelor, where it's like they were all in the house, they were all talking, and they were all figuring out their game. It's like, wait, what's this? Hold on. The star of Big Brother 19, here he is. And he came in and then he gave out his presents. And really, half the premiere was devoted to covering what Paul thinks of everybody, what people think of Paul. So he really was put up on a pedestal in terms of the production. Before we even get to the pendant of protection and what was going on there, he was really just painted as this sort of captain of the house and this important figure. So I think that that's also very important too, as we try to figure out what were people thinking along the way and what was he thinking, that he was treated with a little bit of a different set of circumstances than the other players coming into that moment. And yeah, I mean, you can't really quibble with what he did or didn't do. I mean, he gave friendship bracelets to Elena because she said she would make him a cheese sandwich. he seemed to back away from people who were overly aggressive in terms of talking strategy, which seemed to be a hallmark of Paul this season, where I'm going to keep around the idiots that don't know what they're doing in his mind, and then get rid of people that seem like they have an aggressive plan, as demonstrated by, trying to go after or not giving Cameron a friendship bracelet early on. So I think that it was an important night, but not necessarily because of what he gave out in terms of friendship bracelets.
Yeah, and that's an important note to make, that right from the get-go, Paul's vet status is really something that's highly regarded. And he ultimately, or at least claims to, throw this first HOH to Cody, knowing that Cody is going to make a big target of himself. He quickly gets himself into that Showman's Alliance, despite the fact that Cody hates him and doesn't want anything to do with him. He ends up taking a lot of Cody's allies and getting very close to them, to the point where they end up choosing Paul over Cody. He says pretty quickly on the feeds, here's my plan. I'm a vet. They all seem to think that means something. So I'm just going to tell them, I'm going to give them advice, and they're going to look to me as a mentor. I'm going to plant some seeds. I'm going to let them grow. I'm going to give them good advice at first, which will make them trust me. And then I'm going to give them bad advice, and it's going to send them home. And that's how I'm going to play this game. And it really was, again, we pointed this out a few weeks ago at this point, but he really did lay out the strategy and then followed it through. And I think this is going to be a sticking point when we talk about, was being a vet a huge advantage for him? Certainly. His entire strategy, as he lays it out here, is based on the fact that he is a veteran. He knows what to do. He knows what to say. And he's going to use that status with the other house guests to make it further in the game. Rob, how do you feel about this whole strategy?
Yeah, I thought it was solid. I mean, I remember that first weekend that the live feeds came on that Paul had the friendship chat with the audience, and he talked about what he got right and got wrong last season in terms of his self audit of everything that was going on. And it made a lot of sense. And he felt like that he was going to, you know, paint himself into this position of a figure of authority to be able to give out this advice. And I think that for the most part, he stuck to what he set out to do.
Yeah, I will agree with that. I did not watch the live feeds during Big Brother 11. So that was the only other season that I could remember besides BBOTT where it was just one veteran in the house. But I did not realize how much power Paul had until I watched him. And the fact that he was the only veteran, that was especially problematic for everybody else because there was nobody else around to challenge whatever he said. I mean, if there was four veterans in the house, like in Big Brother 18, then at least there's other people who are fighting for the money and everybody has sort of, you know, a similar plan about, you know, well, I'm a veteran and maybe people will treat me and carry me further and that sort of thing. But Paul was the beginning and the end. He was the alpha and the omega as far as the strategy in the house was concerned early on. And he really had an advantage and he played it up accordingly.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, vets coming in when there's multiple vets, they still have an advantage in that they have experience and they know the game a little better. But I think there's a whole different level when you are the sole veteran. You never have any challenge to the fact that you are the authority. And we really saw Paul take advantage of that. And I think we have to give him credit for taking advantage of that. I don't think every player is capable of using that to their advantage in the way that Paul was able to. But it definitely was like he was given a handgun in a knife fight and he just knew how to pull the trigger. So Paul, he also mentions here, and some people tend to forget about this. He says he helped really instigate this whole argument that gets Megan to self-evict, that he was the one going back and forth telling people like, oh, she said that you called her a panda and all of that stuff, which ends up with Megan self-evicting, which ultimately was not a great thing for him, because without Megan self-evicting, Cody wouldn't have tried to nominate him. But Rob, what were your thoughts on the whole Megan situation?
Who?
Yeah, I mean, it does speak to this strategy which Paul is implementing the whole way, which is ultimately the little finger strategy, where he is going to, you know, create these wars between people in the house and not necessarily knowing how it will play out ahead of time, but knowing that he's going to probably be positioned best to ride out the chaos. So, yeah, I honestly don't have a strong feeling on whether or not this was a great move or not by Paul to get Megan out of the house, because Megan, Megan, and with all due respect to Queen Jillian, just turned out to be such non-entities. It's hard to really get a sense of what they would have been able to do had they stayed in the game.
Yeah. Ultimately, he does receive the Pendant of Protection. He doesn't think he'll ever have to use it, thinks that it's just going to be his backup plan. But pretty quickly, he finds that Cody attempts to nominate him and obviously then has to pull it out. Yes, and then Christmas ends up on the block instead, and he works very hard to make sure that Christmas stays in the game. She stays with a vote of 8-4. I know this is a huge sticking point with a lot of people in regard to Paul. Would he have stayed if he didn't have the Pendant of Protection? I definitely fall in the camp of I think he would have. There were 8 votes to keep him. We're talking about people like Elena, Matt, Raven, Kevin, Josh, Christmas. They were all very solidly on Paul's side, as well as Dominique. And then Mark, who was one of the few people that would have voted out Christmas, was just very anti-Christmas. He was pro-Paul. I think it would have been an even easier sell for Mark to keep Paul, but they wouldn't have even needed his vote. I do think that Paul ultimately stays here. Brent, do you agree?
Taryn, you must be mistaken, because Paul is explicitly telling us in his final two speech that he's never been nominated. So I don't know what you're talking about, the fact that somebody tried to nominate him the first week.
Is that a little ticky-tack?
I mean, if I was on the jury, I would bring it up. I mean, I'm kind of pissed about the fact that the jury has to do these like group community questions. And I'm hoping that one of them will take it upon themselves to say something of their own volition before they ask one of these community questions that they've all agreed to. You know, Julie's like, you all as a group, you guys have agreed to 3 questions together. Anyway, so I hope that Cody's like, well, I tried to nominate your ass, but you had some gimmick that Big Brother gave you to protect you for the first 3 weeks of the game. Anyway, so it's just been annoying me how much Paul's been hanging on the fact that he's never been nominated as his big selling point. It's like the game show where it's like the ta-da, you know, it's like the thing that he wants to point to where he's like, you know, look at this thing over here. And I don't think anybody really cares about it.
Let's just state for the record, Paul does not have Derek's record. There was an attempt to nominate him, and the fact that he wasn't nominated had nothing to do with himself.
Can I just jump in real quick with something about the jury format tonight? I think that it's probably irresponsible to say today at this point that we know how it's going to play out. Don't forget that tonight is going to be a 2-hour finale. In the past, we've had a 90-minute finale. Dr. Will has sort of led that roundtable session that Dr. Will is going to be hosting these interviews for CBS Facebook page. So it sounds like that maybe they went in a different direction in terms of that jury final like a night of deliberation. So it's possible. We saw Survivor in season 34 change the way that their final tribal council was structured. I think it's possible that maybe we see more jury questioning and they bring that back into the game a little bit. Maybe there's a correction. But don't get your hopes up. They're probably going to just do more montages, but it's possible we spend more time with the jury.
Good point, Rob. I actually think that the more questions that are asked is to Paul's detriment. I think that the faster this goes and it clicks along, and I feel like that is to Paul's benefit. So if everybody gets to ask a question, if there's more time, I don't think that's going to help him whatsoever.
Well, I'm very excited at the prospect. I mean, if it's more jury questions, maybe they're going to do a little bit of a reunion after the winner is announced. These are all things we've been asking for a long time, so I'm sure we're not going to get them. But back to the question at hand. Brent, do you think that Paul would have stayed if he had been able to be nominated?
I guess he would have stayed. I have to think that part of the reason why people were so reticent to take a shot at Christmas was the fact that Paul was leading the charge to keep her, and they wanted to make sure they were so fearful of Paul. I was watching Jessica's Instagram from last night, and she was talking about the power of Paul as if it was a religion in the house early on, and people just didn't want to go against that, especially the first few weeks, because they were so enamored with him. Of course, it would become even more of a problem as the weeks went on. But I think that there is a bit of a difference, with all due respect to you, Taryn, insofar as taking a shot at Paul's second in command, Christmas, and then dealing with him if you're wrong, or taking a shot directly at Paul and trying to get him out of the house. I feel like there may have been more room for Cody and Jessica to maneuver people's votes if it was Paul directly going out of the house, as he's a vet. He's already won $50,000. This is our season, guys. Don't make the same mistake every other season has made. But there was no way they could do that. They had to live with, even if they voted Christmas out of the house, they knew that there was no way they could get Paul out of the house for the next 3 weeks. So I have to feel like that, like the pendant of protection combined with Christmas not being on the block instead of Paul, that all led to the fact that it made it look a lot easier for the Paul side of things to prevail.
Yeah, I agree that it definitely made a difference. But again, like when I look at the actual votes, like people like Mark, who maybe could have flipped, that was pretty rare. Like the people that stood by Paul were the people that had a better relationship with Paul. Dominique.
Okay. Matt, okay. Maybe, look. All right. Look, if I have to make a call right now, of course, I think he would have stayed. But I think that there was room to maneuver there if he
certainly
didn't have that damn necklace.
Yes. Ultimately, Paul is able to rein everyone in. But here's the one thing I will say. If I do think Paul would have stayed, but I do think it would have been a detriment to his game, because Alex would have been campaigning against him in that week. Instead, Paul was able to obviously get in with Alex in the next week, and we'll talk about that very, very shortly. But if Alex had voted against Paul and had to campaign against Paul in order to keep Jillian, I think that does some damage to that relationship, that Paul isn't able to do quite as well with Alex. And that was a very, very vital relationship in his game. So I do think this was a big advantage in the fact that he was able to prevent Alex from having any bad feelings toward him. Rob, what do you think about that?
Yeah, that's interesting. The butterfly effect of it all, that Paul was always able, though, no matter what happened, to be able to, even if, you know, he had a disagreement with somebody, to win them back over. So I don't know if it would have been an ultimate deal breaker in terms of Alex's love for Queen Jillian. I think he could have won her back over eventually, but it's, you know, that you change one thing, you change everything.
Yes. All right. So moving on to the week two, HOH, Paul has this thing thrown to him. He pretty quickly targets Cody when everyone is on board with this. He tells Ramses to use his curse, put himself up on the block, and then tells him to throw the veto. And he also gets Josh and Alex to volunteer to be pawns. And as he does this, he also solidifies some great relationships with them, a secret alliance with Alex, a secret secretive relationship with Josh. Really, this is the week that he sets up his entire empire, so to speak. Brent, how are you feeling about his game this week?
I was feeling good about his game at this point in time. Actually, I was a little bit pro Paul at this point. Looking back on it, this was the beginning of the end for me, Taryn. This, like hearing you recount everything that happened. Yeah, right. I mean, hearing you recount everything that happened during week two, I'm like, this is where it all started. Like the things that we were complaining about with, like, you know, a running competition being thrown to Christmas and Josh being thrown that final five HOH, things like that, the veto being thrown, all those sort of things. It all started here. And I thought it was funny that they were all giving him their tickets. And little did I know that I was going to be seeing this for the rest of my time on Big Brother 19.
Yeah. I mean, it really was like this. Paul did a lot of work with this HOH. Very much like Derek taking Devin out, Cody was the house target. So Paul was able to use this HOH to solidify relationships with everyone in the house. There was a very straightforward plan. He followed that plan to a T. It really helped garner trust with every single person in the house. And ultimately Ramses doesn't throw this veto competition. And so Paul is able to make him, Ramses is the next villain. After Cody goes, it's Ramses. And that really is another part of Paul's strategy that starts to be implemented with this week, which is there's always a house target. It's very effective for Paul when there's a house target and he's able to lead the charge there. This week, again, it's really the start of everything, Rob.
Yeah, I will say, though, in the real time of it all, and, it sounds like in the retelling, like, oh, it was all so easy. It was such an obvious move. I remember at that time thinking like, okay, well, Paul obviously has not learned the lessons from Netta from Big Brother Canada. He has a pendant of protection. He's safe for 3 weeks. All he has to do is lay back and not be so aggressive right now. He's overplaying his hand. He's taking on too much, but he really did a great job of setting his game up for the long haul with this aggressive approach. It's not how I would have played it. But he came in with this very blitzing approach to take over as much of the Big Brother 19 game board as he possibly could. And it was remarkably effective. And I think we have to give him a lot of credit for getting into the position where he was, where Brent, in poker terms, that he's got this huge stack by the end of week two.
Yeah, a huge stack. And he's the kind of player who really knows how to use a big stack. Like, he was the kind of player who I think felt more comfortable playing from ahead and trying to make sure he holds on to everything and be willing to use those chips to gather more chips and gather more friends and gather more people that are willing to follow him. I will say that it's a little bit disturbing to me that Ramses became the odd man out because of the fact that he wouldn't throw a veto competition when he was on the block. I remember feeling aghast at that. That was the moment where I started to root for Cody and Jessica. And I think that's where everybody else started to root for them as well. Because as much as I hated them during week one, I sort of didn't like how Paul was running everything. And it was like, oh, you know, how dare you try to win the veto when you're on the block, Ramses? It was very just, you know, a little bit unbelievable for me. And I was like, come on, really? Like, this is a kid. It's his dream. He's on the block and you're telling him he can't even try to win the veto. I think that Ramses inadvertently helped Paul by sort of half trying, half not trying to win that veto because he sets himself up as the next man down, basically. But I don't think Ramsey's realized it at the time, and certainly Jessica did.
Yeah, I mean, it was at this time that we were saying, like, is Paul being way too aggressive? Is he doing Annetta, or is he Derek, or is he Pauly? And I remember talking about Pauly, and it was like with the poker analogy, Pauly would just like burn all of his chips away constantly with dumb moves. And it felt like, is Paul going to do the same thing? He's being so aggressive. But this really was a case where Paul was a bit smarter about how aggressive he was. He was aggressive in the right spots, and he hit the right angles, and he went in on the right hands, and he really played with the big stack very well. Ultimately, you know, never really diminishing that stack. Basically, by the end of this week, we have Cody telling Paul that Mark and Dominique were in on the plan to backdoor him week one. This is going to be the beginning of the end for both Dominique and eventually Mark. And then Cody is, in fact, evicted. So going into week three, we see Alex winning HOH. And despite Paul's urging that she should target Ramsey's, she decides to not do what Paul wants and go after this Showmance alliance. Paul does have a little bit of sway, and he sort of points the target in on Dominique. He's not happy with her talk show the previous week, where she gave Cody a platform to talk about his game and throw people under the bus. So he decides Dominique is the best target here. She's going to get the blame for all those hinky votes that he told Kevin to cast and that Christmas cast from the hospital. And so Dominique ends up, and again, this was another move that I thought, this kind of seems like a mistake. Dominique is so loyal to you, Paul, but it ends up working out all right for him, Brent.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is the point in time where I really started to get anti-Paul, because he, again, was just really controlling everything.
That a couple times already.
There were levels. Here's the thing. It took a while for it to take. Like, there were moments in time where I was like, oh, I don't really like Paul this time, but I guess he's okay. And I liked him last year. And then it was like, I needed another reminder and another reminder and another. And I'm like, oh, I really hate this guy. Like, this is terrible. This is awful. People are listening to him and doing whatever he says, and they won't make up their minds. This was the point in time where I realized these people are so dumb. Like, they're literally just doing whatever Paul tells them to do. The Dominique week, her being on the block, her being ostracized from the house, the way people treated her, the way they treated her, like almost like she had a disease. And I know that happens in Big Brother. I get that. But it did seem like Paul took it to a place where it didn't need to be. And that began this week and then continued on when Paul didn't get his way during the Jessica and Cody halting hex week.
Can I jump in with something about the Dominique debacle? I mean, it really was a gambit, because had Dominique been somebody who was more articulate and able to present a coherent argument, this really could have blown up in Paul's face. But he did single out the right target in Dominique and was able to sort of present the way that, you know, the complicated way in which she was describing things as evidence that she was shady and that she ultimately had to go. And Paul does something also that's very effective. Nobody plays the victim better than Paul. We're talking about him as sort of like this chip leader that has this big lead. But anytime anybody else would ever win a hand, he'd be like, oh, I can't believe it. Look what they're doing to me. They're coming for me. Can't you see that? And so he would be able to reel anybody who ever slighted him in the least. He was always able to vilify that person. And he ends up really coming away from the whole snake gate pretty unscathed, and it ends up being the final nail in Dominique's coffin.
Yeah, thank you for reminding me about that. I was watching Jessica's Instagram last night, Instagram Live with all the other pre-jurors, and it just reminded me how infuriated I was with Dominique during the week that she was on the block, because Rob, she's absolutely learned nothing. The fact that in her retells and what she was trying to get across to the people who were in the hotel room with her at this time, she was like, you know, I told, when Paul came out, I had a discussion with him, and, you know, I didn't tell him exactly what I was thinking. I wanted to hold some stuff back, and, you know, he asked me some questions, and I was like, I don't know if it's that person. It could be that person. Could be this person up here. Like, she's doing the same thing that she did during that week. And thank you for reminding me how frustrated I was when I was watching this on Instagram Live. I was like, you're like, if you would have just been honest, if you would have just been a little bit articulate, which you're completely capable of doing, you might have been able to save yourself before the train went off the tracks. But once you started being shady in front of these people and not telling them the truth and just started playing word games with them, that's when everybody was like, Dominic, we're done with you.
Because she had him figured out. She was like the one person who like could see like all the puzzle pieces at that point in time. And I think it speaks to in these like debates, you know, if somebody is being very careful with their words and the other person is being very direct, I think you have to also be direct. You cannot pussyfoot around that other person who is having the more clear and direct communication.
Yeah. And ultimately, I do think that, you know, again, despite the fact that I initially hesitated with the idea that maybe this wasn't maybe not a good move for Paul, I think Dominique was the right piece to remove. She did have a lot of influence over some of these people. And as soon as Dominique leaves, Paul basically has control over the entire house, minus Ramses and Jessica, which is a pretty impressive feat for week three. And yes, as we mentioned, as soon as Dominique goes up on the block next to Jessica, she quickly realizes that Paul is behind this, that he has betrayed her, but she can't articulate it. She can't figure out how to say it in a way where people are going to believe it, which is not to say that like people weren't ready to believe it. Not that I think they particularly were, but it's to say that she just like couldn't talk. Like she just, there's a guy, and he's got snake-like tendencies. She couldn't even say snake. She couldn't even say, there's a guy that's a snake. It's like, no, snake-like tendencies. And it just, it didn't work for her. And as you guys mentioned, like Paul is really just able to completely shut her down. And this, like between week one, where he completely turns the entire house around Cody, sends him home the next week, and then this week where Dominique comes from Paul, and Paul is able to completely shut her down and send her home this week. By now, people are very scared to go after Paul in any way. And that's going to show its face very quickly in week four, when Jessica wins the HOH after Cody returns to the house. And during this HOH competition, Paul has basically instigated, encouraged Josh to torment Jessica and Cody while they're playing in the HOH, both to, you know, prevent them from winning, hopefully, but also to put the target on Josh in case one of them does win. And of course, when Jessica wins, she immediately goes after Josh for being so aggressive and annoying, as well as being a little bit scared to go straight after Cody and make the same mistake, or straight after Paul and make the same mistake that Cody did. She wants to try and appease the house a little bit. This is potentially Paul's finest week, I think, Rob.
On top of that, Taryn, I also think it's been understated all season long how big it was for Paul that Cody came back into the house, because at this point, you know, we're starting to talk about Jessica rising in the ashes of Cody going out the first time. We were sort of in the real time right about the fact that Cody coming back into the house was going to be bad for Jessica's game. They're going to end up going back into the HOH. But really, Paul is able to paint them as the resistance in the house. These are the two. They're the bad guys this season. We all need to stand united against them. Had it been just Jessica, I don't think that he would have been able to do that. And I think that maybe there might have been more concern for what Paul was doing at this point in time. But Cody and Jessica back together ends up being the perfect distraction from where Paul is standing in terms of what to get everybody else focused on.
Yeah, you know, Taryn, in the political world, they talk about appeasement sometimes and how you never want to be one of the countries that ends up in a situation where you're appeasing the dictator of another country, because it's basically a no-win situation. And that's the situation that Jessica found herself in with Paul. She was very scared to go after him. She felt like the house was somewhat against her, but she was unwilling to recognize that fact. And because of that, she picked the only other person in the house who was not under the spell of Paul in Ramses to put up on the block in a strategic, huge miscalculation. Again, I heard her talking about this on the feeds last night. And I know we're talking about Paul's game, but this, you know, this really helped out Paul's game, because she said that Mark and Elena would not make a decision. They continued to teeter-totter with wanting to maintain themselves in the middle of the house. If they would have just drew the line and said, you know what, we know we're on the bottom here. We know we've got problems. We want to be with Jessica and Cody. She thinks that Ramses would have come on board and she would have been able to save him from the block, and they would have had a five going forward. Again, I don't know if this is fan fiction or not, but Jessica was laying some of the blame at the feet of Elena and Mark for being unwilling to totally cut bait with Paul and the rest of the house and not realizing the strategic misplacement that they were in. And because of that, she makes a mistake here and Paul gets his way. Pretty masterful.
Yeah, and I don't know how much blame we can place on Mark and Elena. I mean, I feel like this really was Jessica's move to make.
She didn't have to put Ramsay's on the block.
Exactly. And you know, we don't know how much influence Paul had directly on Jessica and Cody to put Ramsay's up on the block. It obviously was exactly the move he would have made if he was HOH. So it seems like obviously he'd have a fair amount of influence there. But we didn't have the feeds at the time. But at the very least, we can definitely say that Paul's demonizing of Ramsay's the past few weeks, making him the house target, is definitely what gets him up on the block to some extent, because the reason that Jessica and Cody think that putting Ramsay's up as a pawn is going to please the house is because the whole house wants Ramsay's out. So ultimately, it is Paul's work that gets Ramsay's up there. Paul convinces Josh to play dead. He convinces Jessica and Cody that he's on board, that everyone is on board, that Josh will be going home. He flips the house. He evicts Ramsay's. Very solid work. I do agree, Rob, that I think if Cody hadn't come back into the house and Jessica had won this HOH, I think she teams up with Ramsay's and I think she puts Paul up on the block. I don't think Paul goes home. I think that whoever she puts up next to Paul probably goes home. I don't think Ramsay's would have been happy with the idea of nominating Alex as the pawn, and Alex as the pawn is the only way Paul would have gone home there. So I think they would have taken a shot. I don't think it would have worked, but it would have been something. But with Cody coming back into the house again, he remembers, oh no, we need to do things differently this time. They overcorrect, they try to please the house, and it really backfires. Again, I do feel like this is one of Paul's finest moments in the house. This is really the moment when he should have taken a huge hit, and instead it's a huge win for him.
The other thing that I've heard politically speaking lately is that the only thing necessary for evil to flourish is for good men to do nothing. And I feel like this is where it began here, because these people were totally willing to go with whatever the house target was, not realizing that, you know, one day the house target's going to be you. Like, if you're the one who's not in control of deciding who the next house target is, and it says here that people weren't, they were just reacting. They were Paul's dogs. They didn't realize it, but they should have, because they had no hand, they had no agency in determining who was the next target in the house or who might be the next target in the house. I know that some people thought they did, but they didn't, Taryn. They had no real say over whatsoever. And because of that, when Paul decided that you're going to be the next target on the list, they were totally unprepared for it.
Yeah, and this is when he starts to leave Elena and Mark in the dark. They are now on the outside of this showman's alliance that has shifted into the Paul and Friends alliance. And Ramsay's does go home here. Going into week 5, Paul wins HOH again. And decides he's going to put Jess and Cody up on the block, despite the fact that they're telling him they've got this power that's going to protect them anyway. He essentially says, I'm calling your bluff. I'm putting you up on the block. Cody decides to attack him in the HOH room. Paul attacks back, and Paul makes a huge deal out of this, leading to many different fights around the house, ultimately culminating in this plan to antagonize Cody so much that maybe he'll blow up on somebody. And if he blows up on somebody, maybe Jessica won't use the halting hex on him. This is the biggest controversial week. Paul definitely has a lot to do with it, even though he wasn't one of the people actually doing much of the instigating himself. Rob, what were your thoughts on this week?
Well, this is leading up to the week when we did the live show in New York. So it's definitely leading up to the week that the halting hex was going to be used. We were having a lot of discussion at the time about, did Paul misplay this in terms of Jessica has the halting hex? Similarly, we were talking about, did Jessica misplay this? Does she need to have that conversation? She's mad at Paul after these nominations. She's like, you idiot, why didn't you talk to me before you put us on the block? I would have told you that we didn't have the halting hex. We said, well, why didn't she talk to him before we had these nominations? But you're right about the controversy. This is like the fate, you know. Brent referred to Paul's minions as his dogs a couple of minutes ago, but this is the week that literally that gets back to Paul, and he tells everybody, okay, go in the backyard. You're my dogs. Show them you're my dogs. Bark like dogs. And we see Raven, woof, woof. And so it's not great. I mean, I do think that Paul one of the things that he has done well, and we have sort of been able to see sort of you know, the connecting the dots of he has put people up to do some rather heinous things this season. It's not him doing it. And I feel like that he feels like he's able to sort of like wash his hands of sort of the bad behavior, but he is the person who gave a lot of these orders of the bad behavior that's gone on this season.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, as we mentioned, this week ends up being a bit of a dud week because Jessica does use the Halting Hex. I do think that Paul made the correct decision here to put up Jessica and Cody and flush out this power. You know, it definitely works out for him. And it really, he couldn't leave Jessica and Cody in the house much longer. They knew what was up. If they won HOH again, they absolutely would have targeted him. He also uses this opportunity during all of the confrontations to make Mark and Elena even bigger targets because they were not helping in the confrontations. He's like, whoa, where are Mark and Elena? Huh? They're so on Paul, on Cody and Jess's side. Really setting them up to be the next Jess and Cody. So after the Halting Hex is used, and we have our live show in New York, it's very fun. We get week six where Josh wins that HOH, and Josh, for the first time since basically week one, has a plan that runs opposite to what Paul wants. Josh wants Elena out of the house, and Paul, he never really finds out about like how much Josh wanted this, but he does have to work around another person's plan for really the first time in a while, Brent.
Yeah, this was the week where I really didn't really understand what was going on until you and I talked about it on the live feed show or the roundtable, maybe like less than a week ago, or was it even the roundtable this week, where you basically illuminated me to the fact that Christmas really wasn't in on the plan with Paul to, you know, get Jessica and Cody out of the house, that she was really more concerned about Elena at this point, that she was telling Josh, you know, this is your HOH, don't listen to Paul. And I was all excited thinking, oh, there's finally some anti-Paul sentiment in the house. No, bitch, that's not what was going on. Christmas was just butthurt that Elena was getting all fancy schmancy with her man Paul, and that's why she wanted her out of the house, and it was really nothing more than that. Very depressing.
I just thought of something. Would you think a better question for Christmas on after the finale tonight might be, so Christmas, what do you think of Paul telling the live feeders about how he has feelings for Elena?
What?
What? Like, oh, no, I'm just kidding. I'm just joking. Like, oh.
What do you think about all the rumors that that Paul and Elena are going to get together after the show?
That's not true.
Oh my God, you must. You must.
Not true.
Fake news.
Oh man. All right. So, ultimately, Paul, he takes the chance here. Basically, Paul, again, he never really figures out what Josh is up to, but he doesn't actually have to, because the second that Christmas comes to him about this idea, let me not use the Ring of Replacement to stop Cody from playing in the Power of Veto, Paul goes, I don't know, I feel like you should. And Christmas goes, yeah, you're right, I feel like I should too. And that's basically what happened. Christmas ends up using the Ring of Replacement, which basically ruins any chance of any sort of plan to not get Jess or Cody out, because Jess, and Cody freak out about the fact that the Ring of Replacement is used. And it becomes very clear that they're never going to be able to work with Christmas or Josh after that point.
This is the point in time where I really started to hate Christmas as well, because she was saying for the longest time, I'm not going to use the ring, I'm not going to use the ring. And of course, I knew in the back of my head that another reason why she shouldn't use the ring is because the ring had no expiration date. She could have used that ring all the way up to final seven in order to get somebody like Paul out of the house. You know, what a novel thought. And of course, Paul recognized this fact, and he told us that in his diary rooms. This is the point in time where I really hated Christmas, because she was so effing smug with Jessica, and like she didn't want to use the ring, but then when Paul finally convinced her to and she did use the ring, she was all like, you know, again, ta-da,
my turn.
I know, right?
My turn.
Yeah, look what I did. I made the big move. I did this, you know. And I mean, like, and she, you did nothing. You won nothing. You just did what somebody else told you to do. I couldn't stand her at this point, and it only got worse from here, Taryn.
Yes, this is the story of Paul's game and the story of when Brent hated who. Yes. Ultimately, Paul really, he railroads this entire week. He makes sure that it goes according to his plan. Jessica does go home, and we head into week 7, where Alex wins the HOH and targets Cody. This is a pretty straightforward week. Paul, again, now that Cody is up on the block, he has control of the entire house except for the two next targets, Elena and Mark, who are starting to question him, starting to feel like maybe we should go after Paul. He talks about his endgame plans, that he hopes that he'll never be nominated. He's going to win particular competitions. He's going to throw particular competitions. He's going to take Josh down to the final two. He's basically laying out the rest of his game that he follows pretty much to a T, with some slight alterations along the way.
I think the other important thing to note here is that everything that we've talked about to this point has gone Paul's way, that there's not one bounce or dribble of the ball that he would take back. But now the jury starts. And if Paul ultimately does not win the game tonight, it will be because of the way that he handled not just getting people voted out, but the way that he handled the people that were leaving the house. And so I think that we should definitely, as we talk about these people going out now, just sort of talk about like what they're feeling about Paul is as they're leaving.
Yes, and I think it's important to note this, because Cody leaves the house saying that he's going to be voting for Paul in the final two. So Paul does it right all the way up until Cody leaves. If Paul ends up not getting Cody's vote tonight, it's because something happened after the fact. It's either something that Paul did with Mark or in the house, or maybe it really was the Raven and Matt thing. We'll try to keep track of that as we go. For the most part, this is a very straightforward week for Paul. He's basically got all his plans in place. Jason ends up winning the HOH in the double eviction and sends Elena out of the house. And in the course of doing so, it's revealed that Mark had a conversation with Jason where he talked about Paul being in control of the house, and that if anyone wants to win the game, they need to get Paul out. Paul is not particularly happy about this. And this is around the time where Paul decides, you know what? I've been thinking all this time that maybe I'm going to take out Matt and Raven before Alex and Jason, but Jason is sketching me out, and now he's winning HOHs. Alex is winning HOHs. They're too good at competitions. I need to flip this order around. I need to take out Alex and Jason first and then Matt and Raven, which I do think was a good decision. They were far too strong in the game. And as we see, it takes a long time to get the both of them out. This is the one, basically the one alteration that Paul makes to his plans. Brent, how did you feel about that?
I don't know. I'm just going to say I've been having like Brian Lynch flashbacks here, because I just remember like how mad Brian got over Derek sometimes. And I'm listening to you recount all of this, Taryn. It's just like, I remember how indignant Paul is with any time that any little thing didn't go his way. Like, he was so indignant about things and like, so the victim, like, you know, like what? Like, I can't believe, like, I mean, like, and the whole game's being handed to him by these people. And yet, he would get mad over the littlest things. I'm sorry. What was your question,
Jason,
again?
How come you had this whole conversation with Mark, and now this is the first that I'm hearing about it? Did you actually sit there and have a conversation? Did my name come up in that conversation? Were you talking about getting me out at some point?
I don't even think this conversation mattered necessarily. I don't know, because I mean, I think at this point, Paul's going to recognize that Alex and Jason as a pair, as a competitive twosome, they're just not people he's going to be willing to take down to the end. And they're obviously viable jury threats as well. So even the fact that this conversation took place, I feel like was just sort of a bonus for Paul. But I feel like he would have made sure that Alex and Jason ended up on the block sooner or later, regardless of whether or not this conversation actually happened.
Yeah, I think the real killer was Alex and Jason winning the HOHs back to back.
Yeah.
To point out, Elena leaves this house also saying that she was planning on voting for Paul if he made it to the end. So that's two people in a row who are saying, I'm going to give it to Paul. We got to respect Paul. We're going to see Mark go out in week 8 after the HOH is thrown to Christmas. And Mark is going to leave the house where the last thing he said was that he was going to vote for Paul as well. So again, three in a row. If these people don't vote for Paul, something else has happened here.
Right. But I think that part of it is that, you know, Paul controlled every single thought people had in the house.
Yes, exactly.
The issue was that he wasn't in the jury house, and that people were then comparing notes of like, oh, why was I so mad at you? Oh, Paul told me to be mad at you. Oh, Paul told me to be mad at you. Oh, well, Paul told me this about you. Paul got this. And oh, that thing that I heard that you said this about you. Oh, that was from Paul also. So I think that these conversations that are going to end up happening in the jury house is the one area of the game that he can't control.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Rob, because but the fly in the ointment is that Paul somehow thinks that he can control it, or he's trying. It's like a bowl of Jello that he's trying to like pick up all at once, and it just sort of like getting through his fingers. Like he there's no way he can control everything that happens in the jury house. He thinks he can. He thinks all of his loyal soldiers went to the jury house, Raven, Alex, other people, with a set story, and they're going to stick to that story because they want their boy to win. But that's not what starts to happen at this point.
You know, what do you think of this? Like, each person, as they went out of the house, should Paul have like sat them down at like 3 o'clock in the Austin Powers sex room and just said, okay, let me tell you everything that happened this season, and sort of just go like blow by blow by blow. Here's everything that happened. Here's everything that I did to you. I'm sorry. It wasn't anything personal. You know, basically like do his personal jury speech with each person on their way out the door, rather than have them go out the door believing one thing and then getting completely illuminated in the jury house a different way.
Yeah, I absolutely. I mean, I think that he could have done that in goodbye messages as well. It's a little less risky, but I mean, honestly, the way that most people left the house, they were rolling over and dying. Like they already assumed that Paul was doing all of those things. So if Paul told them, they would have been like, yeah, I figured, and they would have felt, they already felt powerless. Even if they went and tried to tell other people at the last second, it wouldn't have mattered. Nobody would have believed them. I think that, you know, again, I think that Paul's, his dishonesty to the people going out of the house with the goodbye messages, on their way out of the house, it was bad. And this is also the week, during week 8, when Christmas is HOH and she's, sending Mark out of the house, that Paul is continuing to go on anti-Cody rants. And Mark is being like, why are you still talking about Cody? He's gone. What does it matter anymore? It's not like he's a bad person. It's just a game. And Paul is saying, no, he is a bad person. It's not just a game. He's a bad person in real life. And you need to believe it too, because I can't accept the fact that you don't believe it. And it made Mark mad. And I guarantee he went into the jury house with that. And I think if Mark and or Cody eventually don't vote for Paul, this could absolutely be one of the reasons why, because it's just like, why are you doing it? There's no point to it. Cody's gone. You don't have to say he's a bad person in real life. This is no good.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's not necessarily that his alliance was based on numbers or based on strategy. It was an alliance that was sort of based on this morality of friendship.
Yeah.
Oh, and, yes. Yeah.
So Mark does go home here, and we move into week 9, where the target is Jason. Jason is going to be the person going home this week. However, he wins the HOH, and that's no good for Paul, because that means he's going to have to turn on Matt and Raven sooner than he wanted to. So this is when Paul really starts to walk his tightrope, where it's like, I am loyal to everyone, and I'm going to keep Matt and Raven happy while secretly sending one of them home, and pretend to Jason and Alex that I wasn't planning on betraying them. And he's going to walk this tightrope basically for the rest of the game. And this is when it really starts to feel like this, a little unnecessary. Like it's working for him in the game. I think it worked for him with Matt. But as we move forward to the next week, the goodbye messages, I think, is what really kills it. But he does do a good job of keeping everyone in the dark here, Brent.
He does do a good job of that. But also, these people are so dumb. This is also the point in time where I realized that these people are totally willing to fall on their sword for any reason in the house whatsoever. Jason being completely willing to take all the blame for the Matt eviction and completely absolve Paul of it in the eyes of Raven was just mind blowing to me, that these people would just allow other people to escape scot clean, knowing that if something happens in the next week and somebody else wins HOH, that you're going to be the target. Like, Rob, I never understood their thinking here where, you know, like, okay, everything's okay right now because you're in power, but you're about to lose power. And if the people who were in the dark previously win HOH, they're not going to go after Paul or any of his friends. They're going to go after you. These people were so dumb to the point where they were like saying things like, well, I hope they don't go after Paul because we really need Paul. You know, not even thinking about themselves.
Yeah. He had this plan where the three pairs, was going to be that, okay, I'm going to be the third wheel for these three pairs at this point in time. And we could sit here now and say, boy, it really worked with Christmas and Josh. It kind of worked with Raven and Matt, considering that they're his two sycophants that are in the jury. It's really the departures of Alex and Jason where something did not go according to the script in the way that he handled that particular power duo.
Yes, because there was nowhere to hide. I feel like there was no real place for him to hide the ball. I think he had been able to effectively, you know, spread the blame, like I talked about, amongst the other house guests. And he was never able to he was never the one to get blood on his hands, as he's so fond of saying. But the Jason and Alex evictions in particular are just points in time where he had to own it a little bit. And Taryn, as you correctly point out, he's not fun. It's not fun for Paul to own it in front of people that he likes.
Yeah, I mean, as Jason is HOH and he ends up taking Matt out of the game, Jason is convinced to allow everyone to blame him. Jason is going to take the heat for this, and this is going to be what Paul continues to do moving forward, is have somebody else take the heat for him. And I think the problem with Jason and Alex in terms of like him betraying them is that Jason was somebody who always doubted Paul, and he'd always go to Alex with his doubts, and Alex would say, no, trust me. I know what's up. Paul is all about friendship. Like the combination of all those things where it's like once Paul betrays friendship, which is like something out of the game for Alex, then Alex is going to feel super bitter about that. And on top of that, she's going to feel super guilty about the fact that it's on her that she convinced Jason to listen to Paul. And if we see Alex is bitter in this jury, I think a large part of it is that. And I mean, I think we have seen that Alex is bitter. Something we haven't talked about is that they released some photos of the jury members who did some painting, and Alex's painting was like hashtag trust no one, counterfeits, friendship is a lie, like a crazy person has written all over the wall.
It really was. Yes, yeah. It was like a crazy person had written it. I mean, she tried to cram so many things in there, things like, you know, I got you, not unfaithful. I mean, like, I at one point
very jumpy.
It was I don't know if like she was trolling us here with like how bitter she was, but it seemed to me like that her, like I said, her bitterness has only grown as she has taken up residence in the jury house.
I'm very upset about this whole thing.
I think that has to do with the fact that she has to interact with Jason. And I think there's a lot of guilt there. And I think that Jason may have flipped Alex. You know, we talked about it on the roundtable, like where is Alex's vote going to go? After seeing that jury house photo, I think maybe even whether or not the rest of the jury is bitter as well, I think Alex might be voting with Jason here. I think she might decide, I don't want Paul to win.
You know, a little bit of an interesting thing to keep in mind here with this cast is that we have not really commended any of them so far this season on their personal accountability. And it's sort of easier to say rather than, oh, my God, I blew it this season. I had a shot. I could have. It's easy to say, oh, no, Paul lied to me. Paul duped me. So I would have, you know, I was smart. I knew what I was doing. Paul lied to me. It's his fault. I need to make him my scapegoat of why I didn't win the season, as opposed to, yeah, you know what? I blew it. Paul got me. Let me tip my cap and give him my jury vote.
And part of me wonders if, you know, we talked about this on the Psychology of the Dictatorship podcast with John, where it's like part of how Paul was able to take control is by absolving people of their responsibility. They felt like the responsibility was in the group, was with Paul, like he was the leader, and anything they did, they didn't hold moral responsibility for. So it only makes sense that they'd continue along that line of thought once they're in the jury house. Like, I'm not responsible for my loss. It's the group's responsibility. It's Paul's responsibility. So that may be a factor that we need to look at if the jury is bitter at Paul and not bitter at Matt and Raven, because that's a whole other story. So Jason ends up taking Matt out here, and then Christmas is thrown the HOH the next week. She goes straight after Alex and Jason, but Alex is so snowed at this point that even though Christmas was very straightforward, she still believes that she is not the target because she's believing Paul. Paul is feigning ignorance. He's saying, oh my God, I'm going to get backdoored. He wants to make sure that everyone knows that he had nothing to do with this. Ultimately, he has this elaborate plan that Josh isn't a fan of, but Paul decides to go through it anyway, where he wins the veto. He uses it on Alex and then votes with Alex to keep Jason, knowing that Jason will be sent home. And then pretends again, oh my God, I'm so shocked. Josh, you are the worst. He fakes a fight with Josh. And then in the goodbye message, he says to Jason, I don't know what happened, man. I don't know what happened.
If you're seeing this, I don't know. They went rogue. We're still boys. This is Gumpy. What is going on? I have no idea.
I was going to say really quickly that this was Paul's, I think this was really Paul's finest hour, but there were a few turds sprinkled in here because the double eviction itself, the fact that he got his intended target out of the house and he had this elaborate plan set up to vote 2-2, which I thought was crazy. I thought a lot of things could have happened with that plan, but it worked and everybody else willingly went along with it again and kept everybody in the, you know, like Alex and other people in the dark about what really happened and who was in on the plan. Paul had planned for the worst. The worst happened during the double eviction. Alex wins HOH. And Paul was devastated. You could see that he was actually competing for this HOH. The fact that Alex won it, he was like, oh my God, seriously? But again, right back to work. And he's able to correctly point the machine gun at the right people in Kevin and Raven and somehow is able to save Josh and Christmas from even being nominated, Taryn. It was absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, in many ways, I do think this was his finest hour. I think this is one of the things that people are going to remember this whole week between throwing Christmas, the sprinting competition, into the double eviction, where he pulls off this Andy-esque move and convinces Alex that he hasn't betrayed her and that she should target these other people. And many, like one of the greatest feats of Big Brother we saw all season long. But at the same time, I think it was also his darkest hour. I think that he made some very crucial mistakes between the goodbye message to Jason, where he doesn't own up his game. I think that's a huge mistake. And taking out Raven here. Raven was so loyal to him. Raven would have done anything. And if he had taken Raven to the end, I think he wins no matter what. And if Raven ends up being the thing that kills his game in the jury house, obviously it's hard to really predict that, but it certainly wouldn't have happened if Raven wasn't there. And he should have been able to predict that people hate Raven so much that he would have been able to beat her. I know he was scared of the sympathy factor, but I think Raven was the perfect person to take down to the end. And I really think it was a mistake to let her go.
I agree with everything you're saying there, Taryn. And I also think that just to go back to, yes, it was masterful what he pulled off during that double eviction lead up and the week. But I think another mistake that happened at this point in time was that he never fully got Josh on board with this plan, leading Josh to have those conversations with Jason in the hot tub when he's crying. And ultimately, that goodbye message that Josh leaves for Jason that night, I think is going to end up, if we go back and Paul does not win this game tonight and there is a bitter jury, I think that this night in particular was the beginning of the end for Paul as the winner of this season.
Yeah, and that's important to point out too, because Paul and Josh have talked about this and they're both lying to each other about what they have told people who were going to the jury. Paul's been asking Josh, so have you been gassing them, you know, making stuff up? And of course Josh is like, yeah totally, especially with Jason. But of course that's not what's really been happening. Josh has been telling the jurors the truth. And I think that Paul's really going to be in for a surprise tonight when he finds out that he's been being played by Josh. Paul does not react well when he's being played by other people or when he feels like he's been had. If he feels at all had by Josh, having lied to him and expose the fact that he was in a Final Three alliance with the two of them. I think that could be problematic for him. And also the fact that Paul was unwilling to face the fact that even someone as loyal as Raven, once her game is done, she's not going to go to the jury house with her marching orders. I mean, Paul was talking about like Alex going to Raven and getting their stories straight. I mean, Raven's out of the game at this point. She's lost her chance at $500,000. Even if she likes you, Paul, she has no incentive to continue to play the game in the jury house. She was honest with Jason about who was in on the plan with Paul and who wasn't. And she indicted Paul and said he knew about it. And that's where I think some of this anti-Paul bias might have started.
But yeah. Go ahead.
And if Raven was sitting against Paul in the final two tonight, that we would be talking about a lock 8-1 vote for Paul to win the game.
Yeah, I agree.
Paul is my buddy.
Exactly. Also, I forgot to mention, I mean, Matt obviously leaves the house planning on voting for Paul.
I love it that you forgot about Matt.
All you gotta do.
Jason is the first person to leave the house not planning on voting for Paul in the final two. Raven ends up leaving in this double eviction, also planning on voting for Paul. These first three evictions, Cody, Mark, and Elena, they respect Paul's game. They know enough about Paul's game that they don't feel lied to by Paul. They don't feel like they've been made a fool of. I don't think they have a whole lot of reason to be bitter, except for the trash talking. Again, when Paul is trash talking Cody to Mark, I think that could be what sours those three. And then after those three, Paul is trying to play them for fools and he's really disrespecting them. He's lying to them in goodbye messages. He's letting other people take the heat. If we see them bitter about that, that could be the reason why from this point on, these people are bitter.
Can I say one thing really quickly? One piece of information that I never got to see Raven get, and I have to believe at some point she's gotten this information from Alex when she arrived at the jury house, is that Paul was the reason she went home. She's been saying she's in a Final Three alliance with Paul, that her and Paul were running the show, that she was the puppet master of everything. And she's never, ever been willing to face the fact that Paul betrayed her. She thought that the one vote to save her came from Paul. It did not. It came from Josh. Alex is certainly aware of that fact. Look, I know that we're sitting here going, there's, you know, a couple of idiots who are just going to vote for Paul no matter what. But on the other hand, I haven't really seen Raven acknowledge the fact that Paul was the one who got her out of the game. Paul is the reason she lost her chance at $500,000, not anybody else. And I feel like that there may even be room to maneuver there once she realizes that. Even I know, regardless of what we've heard.
Yeah, there was another interview with Allison Grodner where she pointed to Raven and Matt specifically as people who were setting their feelings aside and trying to vote for the best player. If we want to read into that, we can maybe assume that obviously Raven has found out and she's saying, okay, you know what, that doesn't matter. We should still vote for the best player.
Still going to vote for my buddy. Yeah,
exactly. I don't think that's setting their feelings aside. I think that's like sticking to the feelings that they had of loving Paul. So heading into week 11, the HOH is thrown to Josh, who very heavily considers targeting Paul here. Ultimately, I don't think Paul would have gone if he doesn't win this veto, but he does win the veto. So we'll never know for sure because the plan ends up failing there. And because he wins this veto, Paul has to be the one to break the news to Alex. I'm not using the veto on you. It was a very hard conversation for him, and he doesn't handle it particularly well because, again, he's not very honest in the conversation, leaving plenty of room for Alex to be mad all over again once she gets to jury. And this is, again, another weak point, I think, in Paul's jury management. Alex does leave the house thinking that she's going to be voting for Paul, but there's a lot of bitterness there. And it's very easy to see how that may have established itself once she reached the jury house, Rob.
I'm so stupid.
Yeah, we got to see a little bit of that fallout the night after she went out, where she thought that, you know, Jason thought Alex was responsible. Then Alex ends up with the assist from Raven getting to explain to Jason, no, it was all Paul. It's going to be very interesting to see. She's a key figure in terms of how this jury ultimately is going to end up going tonight.
Yeah, for sure. So then ultimately, Paul wins the final four HOH, the one he had always decided he was going to win. I haven't mentioned Kevin basically all this recap long, but Kevin has been a loyal soldier to Paul, just like everyone else along the way, just doing whatever Paul tells him to do. And it's at this point that Paul essentially decides, I've used up your usefulness. I don't need you anymore. He keeps Kevin calm. He keeps him happy. He talks to him a lot, and then wins the veto and allows Christmas to be the one to send him home again. Like, oh man, Christmas went rogue in the goodbye message. He's saying, man, I don't know what happened with Christmas. Just really just like doing everything he can to try and make Kevin feel like a fool. Right. Kevin, again, does leave the house saying he's going to be voting for Paul in the final two, but you never know what happens afterward. If all of these other people have said it and they've changed their mind, there's no reason to think that Kevin might also change his mind.
Yeah, it's definitely possible he's changed his mind, especially if he got a chance to go to the jury house. And it looks from the finger painting that he did at least spend a day with them. The one thing that I wanted to bring up is, and I talked about this on Monday, but I really think it bears repeating here again. Arissa Cox said, you know, in your goodbye messages, if you are lying to people and then they eventually figure out that lie and they associate that feeling of humiliation with you, that's not a good look headed toward the final two. And I really feel like that's where Paul went wrong with some of these goodbye messages, by making these people, by basically treating them like idiots. And then when they later find out, oh my God, he was like totally treating me like an idiot. He was lying to me the entire time in the goodbye message of all things. I feel like it's just not a good look for him, Rob.
You think that he should have gone with your beloved Karen strategy for the goodbye messages?
And that would be...
I never liked you. You were terrible to live with, Kevin.
Okay, yes. Let's talk about that really quickly. I, insofar as his treatment of Alex and Kevin, I do feel like, especially with Alex more than anything, look, Kevin's never going to get mad at anybody. I don't think, especially someone like Paul, who says, look, you're just too good. I can't beat you in this game. If Paul would have had that discussion with Kevin, Kevin would have been like, yeah, I get it, man. You know, you got to play your game, girl, bye. But Alex is the one where I feel like Paul really, really miscalculated Taryn, because he never gave Alex the opportunity to sort of blow up in the house. Because he wasn't honest with her. He didn't tell her everything, because it was his need to control everything moving forward that stayed his hand. He wasn't honest with Alex because he was planning in the eventuality that if Kevin out of nowhere won HOH at the final four, then he would have a backup plan. But of course, that was never going to happen. And even if that did happen, Paul's always going to win the veto against Christmas and Josh in the final four anyway. So I never understood him not at least being honest with Alex here and telling her the real story, because of the fact that she never got to blow up in front of Paul, then that anger only boiled. It was like a low simmer on the stove. And then when it got to the jury house, I feel like it might have exploded.
Yeah, very, very possible. I do find it interesting that you've taken this finger painting thing as like definitive evidence that Kevin must be interacting with. Like, they don't have the finger painting technology to individually finger paint while they're in sequester. Like, they can have more than one finger painting set. I don't understand why you think.
You really think that Big Brother, the same place that makes you pay for Gina Marie's stitches,
because finger
that they sprung for seven different sets of finger paints, you at seven different hotel rooms, you really think this?
It was what, like a couple dollars for finger paint and paper?
I'm just
like
saying.
I mean, all right,
Gina Marie had to pay for her own damn stitches. I don't know what you're talking about.
Look, I'm not gonna finger paint by myself. I'm only gonna finger paint in a group. That's how we do it in Boston.
Oh man, yes. So moving into the final week, this week, Paul's final move, he has in fact convinced Josh to take him to the final two. We talked about this at the top of the show. He's essentially guaranteed his spot in the final two. We've been criticizing his decision to take Josh to the final three all season long, but ultimately when it came down to it, he was able to make the sell and get Josh to take him. I do still think that it was a fault in his game to have a misread on Josh. Josh has been planning on cutting him all season long. Paul didn't know that. He didn't know it's okay that Josh isn't going to cut me. I'll convince him at the final three. Paul was under the assumption that he had already convinced him, but ultimately, it doesn't matter a whole lot if he's able to get it done anyway. So, you know, this is the end of Paul's game here. He's either going to win next to Josh with the jury, or he's going to lose to that bitter jury. And there are, I think we outlined many of the ways that he could have been at fault for that. There's also the possibility that we've outlined where they're so mad at Matt and Raven that he loses, in which case I wouldn't say he's as at fault. Again, it's pretty hard to predict and control that. But either way, going through this Paul's game, especially compared to Christmas and Josh, I mean, Paul was the driving force for every single week. He controlled every single outcome. There wasn't a single decision that didn't run through Paul. He, without a doubt, whether he wins or loses, was in control of this house from start to finish.
I have to say really quickly that listening to you recount Paul's game and now having listened to the whole thing, I'm actually less mad than I was when we started like an hour ago.
That's good.
I'm being serious here. I'm not joshing, so to speak. I really am. It was these idiot people, Rob, that allowed everything to happen. It wasn't Paul. Paul was playing the game. It was these idiot people that just were totally snowed by him. If Paul wins tonight, I'm gonna be happy for him. And if Josh wins tonight, I'm gonna be happy for him. So I can't lose tonight. Taryn, what about you?
I mean, that's a good way to look at it. I mean, Paul played his ass off. He worked 50 times harder than anybody else who was in that game in this season. And if he wins, he does deserve every dollar that he walks away from it. But if he loses, it will be because he had a fundamental misunderstanding about how this game works. And it's almost unforgivable for a person who also lost in the final two a year ago, that when you get to the final two in a game such as this, especially when you played this dominating, controlling game that he did, I've always said that the final tribal council, the final two, you are a magician all season long. You are pulling off masterful, magical moves the entire season. But at the end of the magic show, it's time to come clean about, okay, this is how I did this trick. This rabbit was actually in my jacket the entire time. It was sleight of hand. I pulled it out. You guys didn't see. You were looking over there, but there was a distraction. And what he cannot do is to say, no, I was actually magical. I have these powers and I was able to use them. And I used my actual magic. And just goes back to the difference between Boston Rob and Coach in Survivor 22 versus Survivor 23. I tweeted out earlier today, will Paul win this game tonight or will he come up short? We'll be talking about that on this podcast. Sophie Clark, who initially was the first person to say, Paul is not Boston Rob, he is Coach. She makes a prediction. She says short. She thinks that he will come up short. And this is not a height joke. It will be fascinating for me tonight. All eyes will be on Paul. Will he own his game? Finally, will he be able to give this honest speech to these people? Will he treat them as equals and human beings for the first time this season, or will he continue to look at them as stepping stones to his eventual victory? I think that it all comes down to Paul tonight.
Yeah. And I'm very curious to know if the jury doesn't award him the win, what they point to as to why. Because I really feel like we've outlined many of the reasons why Paul could have lost their vote. And I think that many of those things could have been easily overcome if he had just taken the time to even just watch his own season. You know,
never cared, didn't care.
Well, no. Let's talk about that really quickly. So, Rob, you're going to be in the backyard. If Paul loses tonight, you're going to ask him, so why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do this? Never cared. That's going to be his answer. I can tell you that right now. But I can tell you from watching the feeds that that's not true, because he said, okay, yeah, never cared, but I do think about it and I do care about it. I mean, he said those words to us. So it's important.
My response to never cared would be, Paul, with all due respect, I watched you for 2 years now play this game, especially this year. You played so hard. I cannot accept that as an answer that you never cared. You cared so much. You worked so hard this season that this has to, that what was it that why didn't you take the time and set these people straight on the way out the door as opposed to trying to lie to them along the way?
Yeah, and I think what Paul is going to say if he loses is, what more could I have done? Because as we pointed out, almost every single person left the game planning on voting for Paul. And I think he's going to point to that and say, look, I did everything that I could. They all were going to vote for me the last time I talked to them. There's nothing I could have done to change that. And I think it's going to be very hard to get through to him and say, well, actually, there were a lot of things that you maybe could have done, including just be honest with them, because even though they were telling you that they were going to vote for you as they left, they were doing that under a false pretense. They were under the assumption that there was a different truth. And when they went to the jury, they found out the real truth. And that gave them an opportunity to change their mind. And I don't know if he's going to even really be able to accept that.
And also, Rob, since you're going to be in the backyard, can you do a little housekeeping for us and just ask Kevin, sort of like sleight of hand wise, like, so were you doing your finger paints with other people or were you by yourself?
Sure. I'll okay. Put that on the list.
I want to know the answer to this. All right.
Cool. We'll put that on a list of questions.
All right.
Rob, you're going to be there with Dr. Will and Ika. I mean,
and Morgan.
Man.
Morgan Willett also. What a party it's going to be.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm really excited.
Yeah. All right. So that's Paul's game. Unless you two have any more thoughts that you want to bring up before we wrap this up.
No, I'm so glad we did this. I think that the stage has really been set. It's Paul's night, and we'll either talk about that, how Paul blew it, or, you know, how Paul won. And I really do believe that we will talk about him in sort of these glowing terms. I think that we'll talk about him. Taryn, I know you want to put him more in the middle, but in terms of the dominating direction of the game, that he just completely controlled everything that happened in that house for 90 some odd days. I think that, you know, that he should be put up there as a top five winner if he's able to pull this off. And it's going to be one of the biggest collapses in the history of reality television if he does not.
Yeah, I think we might need a little bit more distance to evaluate Paul's game properly. So, I mean, I'll at least allow for that possibility, because you're right, it is a pretty dominating performance. If he does go on to win, I think more than anything, I'm really glad that we did this, because it allowed me to see basically how hard Paul was playing the entire time. Taryn, there were things that I forgot about him putting targets on Dominique and how she talked and Jason outing the fact that he had that conversation with Mark. I mean, they're just things you forget along the way. I forgot how bad some of these people played. I forgot how good in places Paul played. I forgot many things about what happened during the double eviction, how masterful that was, and also a couple of things that he did wrong along the way. So it was very fun to go through this. I'm glad we did. Can't wait to see what happens tonight.
Yeah, and I've enjoyed these morning updates so much. You know, everyone that's been here, there are some regulars that are here every single morning with me, and I'm very glad that we have a record, like historical record of, you know, thoughts every single day as to what's going on in this house. So if you have any doubts about like what was happening in this week, just go back and listen to that dated podcast.
Yeah, we got the receipts.
Yes,
just like I got the receipts for you.
Yes. One day Paul will go back and listen to every one of your morning updates, Taryn.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Very comfy.
But yes, it was so much fun, and thank you everyone who's listened to these. It's really it's been so great, and these have been so successful, and people have loved them, and I've loved doing them. I look forward to continue to do them moving forward to Celebrity Big Brother and Big Brother Canada 6 and everything in the future. So and thank you guys for joining me here.
Yeah. Taryn, can I also just commend you on the outstanding job that you did, that these turned out to be so much better than I ever could have imagined when we first started talking about. I think it would be great if we had some sort of daily morning update. You turned this into such a thing. I never in my wildest dreams imagined that you would have a perfect attendance in terms of covering this, that there was not a day that either you did not show up or that the show didn't go on. And it really is absolutely amazing. You were, so dedicated to it. And I know how much I got a lot of emails from the listeners about what a great job you did. And you never lost your mind over the course of the whole season. And that's amazing. So really, kudos to you, Taryn. And again, excellent work for another summer, Brent, and kudos to you for, even though you may have lost your mind a few times along the way, you always got it back.
and you seem as coherent as ever.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, it's been very fun. I will tell you a little bit of inside baseball here at Rob is a Podcast, that when Rob was talking about doing these things and I was talking to him on the phone about it, he was like, well, you know, make sure you guys like keep it professional. Like, I don't want you to be there drinking at like 10 in the morning. Like, hey, oh, this is what Paul did last night.
I wasn't worried about you.
I know. Yeah. But it turned into something really great and professional. And Taryn, you've done a great job.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's the whole experience has been great. And I look forward to continuing these in the future. It gave me something to look forward to every single day. So make sure you tune in tonight. We're going to be recapping the season finale of Big Brother 19. We're going to find out everything that we've been speculating on for the last 3 to 4 to 5 or however many days. It's going to be great. So make sure you check it out. Also, I spoke with Lita on the Taryn Show. Very deep a little bit dark conversation, but very important, I think. And I really want to commend Lita. She really opened up and was very brave with what she talked about. So check that out if you're at all interested with my conversation with Lita. I also recorded about the season finale of American Ninja Warrior season 9 with Lita, and that will be out hopefully sometime today. And you can check that out. You can find me on the episode. I was there in Vegas, so lots of stuff happening there. Rob, do we have anything else coming up in the pipeline? Cool.
We have so much Survivor stuff right now. It's been a challenge just to fit it all in before the start of the Survivor season. Of course, we dropped the 4th edition of the great work that Taryn has done on First One Out with putting that all together. What Josh Wigler ended up getting in Fiji, all about the Hustlers Tribe. That's up on robisawebsite.com right now. Plus, we just posted another one of our interview previews that Josh got with Ben and Allie. In addition, that Nicole and I have always done a Survivor season preview going back to Survivor Nicaragua, which was 15 seasons ago. This time around, that we had just so much Survivor stuff in the feed that I ended up posting it on our Patreon feed as part of the weekly podcast that Nicole and I do on Patreon. But because I didn't want to take anything away from people who've had that podcast for all these years, even though it's in our Patreon podcast feed, you can listen to it for free if you go to our Patreon page. If you go to robisawebsite.com/patron, just scroll down. It's the first post that is there. You can listen to that completely for free. A lot of fun going through the season with Nicole. Nicole and I made our picks for the winner of the season and had a lot of fun going through that last night.
Yeah. And let me just say about First One Out, you know, when we started doing this series, I think both Josh and I, the thing we were looking forward to most was these final parts for First One Out. Now that we've gotten through the cast previews, there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that is just fascinating for me to listen to when I listen to this stuff. There's a lot more room for the fancy editing and stuff. So very much looking forward to releasing these final bits of First One Out. I hope you guys enjoy them. They're the parts I've been looking forward to the most, so hopefully you guys enjoy them as well. But I want to thank you all again for joining me all season long, and you know, we're gonna see you next season.
All right.